Netflix queue. Watch a few of my favorite rom-coms with you. Harry met Sally.
Lena met Katie.
We're your quirky best friends
and your leading ladies.
Meet cute or online date. Is love an algorithm, scripted or fate?
It's the rom-com effect. We're here to be direct about the love we expect in the movies we dissect. We sometimes have a guest.
Does it pass the Bechdel test?
We're on a movie watching quest.
Because of romance,
we're obsessed. It's a rom-com effect. It rhymes with rom-com effect.
Rom-com!
Love them.
Hello. Welcome back to the Rom-Com Effect. I'm Katie.
And I'm Lena.
And we have a wonderful guest with us here today, Aaron Burns Siskin.
Hi. Welcome, Aaron.
Aaron is a friend from improv. We do mock together. Yeah. She's a very talented improviser and comedian. So we're lucky to have her.
I'm happy to be here. Finally, a place to talk about romantic comedies.
Yeah. It's a safe space where you can say whatever you want about them.
Finally.
And we're covering the Netflix original, Let It Snow.
Snow. Not to be confused with the Hallmark Let It Snow with Melissa Joan Hart, which
there's
also
already
exists.
Another one?
Oh, I didn't even realize there was another
few
one
years ago.
Same name.
Yeah. Oh, I just noticed that today. I was like, that's crazy.
What if I had shown up and watched the wrong movie?
Honestly, that would be great. I think we would still go ahead and record and just
be like, where do they cross over? Compare and contrast the plot.
I will say we love Melissa Joan Hart. We just watched Holiday in Handcuffs for the podcast, and I am pretty sure I've gotten everyone in my office to agree to watch it.
Yes.
I don't know anything but the title, and I absolutely am going to watch it as soon as I get
Well, it has Mario Lopez in it, too, so there you go.
There we go.
We needed another reason. But we're not talking about that today. No. We're talking about Let It Snow.
Netflix, a ridge, Christmas Netflix move.
Some say it's the teen version of Love Actually, and they're not wrong.
They're not.
There's a lot of, it's a big ensemble cast. There's a lot of storylines going on.
There's a lot of music
interwoven.
Oh yeah, the soundtrack
was very good.
Pretty banging.
Yeah, I was here for it.
Yeah,
yeah.
There were some musical moments that reminded me of To All the Boys I Loved Before.
Yes.
And I appreciated that because I thought the music in that movie was amazing.
So good. Yes. I still listen to that soundtrack.
I do too.
It's legitimately
it's very good.
My favorite song was Cool Out.
Oh, I love Cool Out. I would drive around town listening to it on repeat because I go through phases like that where I just listen to the same song for like.
Oh, I do too.
Oh, same.
Cool Out, baby. Cool Out, baby.
So good. I love to listen to a song over and over again until it loses all meaning.
I'm till I'm desensitized,
like emotional resonance. Yeah,
no, truly. Like every time I'm in my car, I listen to "Motion Sickness" by Phoebe Bridgers, which is like such a very sad song. Motion sickness.
Oh, that's just what it's called.
But yeah, in the lyrics are like, "I have emotional motion sickness," and it is just it. You know what? But Ryan Adams needed to be told. She's basically just.
Oh yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah,
about
singing about
him
about how, he's
awful
a
he was.
Crap person.
Oh my god, I'm glad she got it out in the form of an amazing song.
Incred.
I have emotional motion sickness.
I don't know.
Let's
it.
Just play it. No, I'm kidding.
let's just take a brief break while we listen to this song and bear out our feelings. So this all was right, obviously all of our first times seeing this movie.
Yes.
Brand new. Yeah. It's directed by Luke Schellen. I can't read my own handwriting.
That sounds right to me.
Luke Schellen.
Schellen?
Luke Schellen.
Yeah, you know, my N was looking real tall there.
Yeah.
Looked like an H.
I can see how that would happen. Let's go over the writing credits. It's Laura Solon, Victoria Strauss, and Kay Cannon, who wrote the Pitch Perfect movies and
Blockers. Yeah.
And then also it's based off of a book, which was written by John Green, YA Darling.
King.
Yes.
YA King.
Fault in Our Stars. Turtles all the way down.
Heard of him.
And also,
has he made you cry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a little confused because the book is written by three people: John Green, Lauren Miracle, and Maureen Johnson, which I'm like, dang, a book written by three people.
I think it's an anthology.
Oh.
based on what I read on the Let It Snow Wikipedia page,
great.
It sounds like
I love a prepared guess. Like this.
There are like
love it.
Three core stories, which is interesting because there's way more going on in the film. Yeah. But the YA novel has the like three core.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I can glean, not from reading the book, but the Wikipedia page about the film that's based on the book,
yes,
is that that would account for the that makes sense. Authors.
Got it.
That makes sense. Maureen Johnson sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. But we're not going to look her up.
No.
We're going to leave it at that.
We don't have time.
So I guess this is a good point to get into what this movie is actually about.
Right.
Since it's based on this anthology series, apparently. It is like Love Actually, where you have a bunch of interwoven stories in this small town in Illinois based around the central location of the Awful House. It's a Waffle House where the W light has been taken down.
But it's a town, right?
It's Waffle Town.
Awful Town.
It's oh, yes. I'm sorry. It's Awful Town.
It's a knockoff Waffle House.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. They probably couldn't clear it. And also Awful Town, it's like there's a whole theme of like trying to get out of this place.
Right. I do love that. They're like, oh, let's go hang at Awful Town. Like, this is a fun little
it was cute. Tidbit. And in the end, it just wasn't awful anymore.
Yeah.
But basically, you have several main storylines. I would say one of the most central ones is Stuart and Julie.
Mm-hmm.
Stuart is a famous singer, and he is taking the train to try to feel like a normal guy for a day. He just got sick of the tour bus, and on the train he meets Julie, who is played by the woman who also played Dora in the Dora
live
and the
action
Lost City of
she
Gold.
Looked so familiar to me.
Her name's Isabella Merced.
She is so great.
She was really
great.
Good.
Yeah,
I that's what I was like, that's like a big note. I was like, she's someone to watch. I feel like she's like a really good actress.
Yeah, I like
see
her.
Amazing things from her.
Yeah,
she really carried her own in this movie. And I, as someone who did go see Dora with my little sis, we loved it. It was so fun. She was like, she just like embodied the spirit of Dora the Explorer, and it was a very fun movie for us to see. We will not be covering that on the podcast.
Too bad.
But these two, they meet on the train in cute fashion. Julie doesn't care that Stuart is famous, and he finds that kind of refreshing about her, obviously, because this is what he was looking for.
Yeah.
So when the train gets stopped on the tracks because of snow, there's a central theme of snow in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the title. And also in the opening narration by Joan Cusack, who is the tinfoil woman in the movie. They get off the train because they're so close to her house anyway, and they stop at the Waffle House for some waffles. Basically, Stuart ends up spending Christmas with Julie's family, who are going through a hard time because Julie's mother is ill, and Julie is having a hard time deciding whether to kind of continue her life's path by going to college at Columbia or doing what she wants to do, which is staying home and taking care of her mom and her grandfather. So Stuart kind of gets to join in with their family dynamic for the day. And then we have Tobin and the Duke, Angie.
Yeah.
This is Kiernan Shipka and
also known as Sabrina the New Teenage Witch.
Oh, so great.
I love her.
I like
Sabrina the Netflix Witch.
Yeah. And the guy who plays Tobin, I didn't write his name down, but he's in the Descendants movies, which my little sis has also gotten me quite familiar with the soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
that we play that in Hamilton when we're driving around town. she loves musicals. And they are BFFs. They get along great, but there's like this cute college boy, JP, who's in town for the holidays, and Angie definitely has a crush on him, and it makes Tobin jealous.
Because Tobin's been in love with her this whole time.
All these years. All 16 years of their lives.
He's been holding a candle for the Duke. Will the Duke light the candle?
Oh my God. Yeah, so they...
Sorry, I just turned into Joan Cusack for a second.
You wrapped yourself in tinfoil. So they have their own love story, and they do end up together at the end after getting into some car
shenanigans.
Chase shenanigans and trying to get alcohol to the Awful Town for Keon's party that he's hosting, because he tried to have it at home, but his family came back early their Christmas.
That was quite funny. Keon is played by Jacob Batalon, who was in the Amazing Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man movies.
Far From Home
and Homecoming.
Yeah.
With Tom Holland.
They made it easy for us to remember and we botched it.
Yep. But Keon was like the...
his best friend in high school.
Yeah, and just like the comic relief, kind of tying everybody together. Like, it's his party that's everyone's heading out to at the end of the night.
At Awful Town.
Yeah, at Awful Town. He's like the mythical party holder.
And he's also waiting for someone to come to the
DJ.
Party.
A famous DJ.
Yeah.
Because I guess Keon wants to be a DJ, and he's like, I'm going to do a set, and then he'll see me and discover me.
Mm-hmm.
DJ Tempest is the famous DJ. Yeah. But he works at Awful Town.
He does. And he's also friends with Tobin and Angie.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so Dory works at Awful Town with Keon, and Dory had... not as part of the movie, just his backstory, an emotional connection one night with Carrie, who is part of a dance team that comes into the Awful House. And Carrie is not giving Dory the time of day.
No.
And
she's ghosting her.
She's just so cold. Yeah. She's just blowing her off to her face. And it's really sad.
Because Dory's being super sweet.
Brings
a special waffle ball
milkshake,
modeled after a Harry Potter quaffle, and it's like filled with ice cream. I'm like, that's the sweetest thing ever. If anyone gave that to me, I would propose.
See, now I feel like I'm dead inside, because basically everything that Dory did, I was like, you're a tryhard and I would never date you.
That's really funny. Well, I will say I did have a little bit of trouble with their storyline, because I don't know if I missed something.
Yeah.
But the Dory's understanding was that Carrie was openly out.
Yeah.
Yes.
About her sexuality.
Yes.
And I don't know if I missed her saying that Carrie was out, but I was just like, oh, clearly this girl isn't out.
Yeah, and that's why she's being
weird. Acting this way. So I don't know. I guess I just had a little...
Well, Carrie explains that, like, she lied to Dory, like...
At the end
about...
Yes.
Yeah. But it isn't clear, because was like... Because I was watching it with somebody, and we were even talking about it. It's like, oh, is this like a post-coming out thing? Like, is it just like... she's not comfortable talking about it with certain people, and that's her prerogative or whatever. But you're right. It was not explicit.
Yeah. I think they needed to just say something at the top where, when she's like venting to her friend, she's like, I don't get it. Like, she's out. Like,
she told me, or
she told
whatever.
Me. Yeah. So she doesn't have anything to hide from her friends.
Yeah.
You know, my screenwriting brain is, it needed that moment. They basically, Dory is best friends with Addie, who is distraught because her boyfriend
Jeb, which, oh god, what a terrible name.
We have a Jeb,
and we have an Addie and an Angie
and a Dory.
Why
and a
did
Carrie.
They do this?
They really made a lot of these names very similar.
Really could have made these names more different
Julie.
From each other.
A lot of E names.
Yeah, two syllable E's,
and then a Stewart. Inexplicable.
And then
Stuart.
Yeah.
Well,
he's famous.
Tobin
name.
And Keon.
And then they're like, you know what? We're going to make Angie another IE name, but you know what? We're going to call her the Duke.
Yeah, that'll make it easier.
She's always been one of the boys. So she's Duke of the Boys.
Yep. That was the explanation for her nickname.
Yeah.
Which when Tobin explained that, I was like, well, that's why you're in the gosh darn friend zone. You give the girl you're in love with a masculine nickname. Anyway, it's fine. They make out in the end. It's fine. They get together.
Everybody who's supposed to kisses in this movie, which I appreciate.
Yeah. And everyone who's supposed to get a pig gets a pig.
That's right.
That's true.
Which comes up more than you think it would in this movie.
Which is a fair amount, because Dory and Addie are obsessed with pigs.
And they're BFFs.
But they get in a fight right when Dory is showing Addie this pig that she thinks is super cute at a store downtown. And then Addie goes on her little adventure with the tinfoil lady, where they keep running into each other because Addie's upset because she's not getting the love she feels she deserves from her boyfriend.
Jeb.
We're going to do that the whole episode. Jeb! Exclamation point.
In case you're wondering,
please clap for Jeb.
Could you imagine?
Oh my God.
He's not doing anything else.
He's sitting there in the booth at the diner. and poor Addie, it becomes clear that her family life isn't great. So she's kind of needy because she doesn't feel loved by the people that she wants to love her. But she comes to realize through Addie
through
yelling
Dory.
At her.
Through
Dory yelling at her.
Good God. I will get through. Synopsis if it kills me.
Dory yells at her, why are you always trying to, like, you know, squeeze the love out of people who don't care about you? And mm-hmm. I'm always here for you. I'm like along yeah. for the ride through this cycle when we do it again and again, but you don't care about that.
Yeah.
And Addie storms away, but eventually comes to realize through her adventures with Tinfoil Lady that Dory is right.
Yeah.
And then she comes back with the pig. It's an apology pig.
That was cute.
That was
cute. I liked that.
Aaron is like, no.
I just don't understand why you would give a pig as a gift.
That is that a just lot of feels responsibility.
So reckless. Yeah, I mean, how these teens.
Well, they have no parental supervision.
No, there seem
they have
to
no
be
parents to bounce ideas
off. No authority figures
of
at all.
Any
Julie's mom is the only parent around.
Yeah.
And she's dying.
And she is. And then Julie's pops, he's just kind of like a stereotypical strict grandpa
who's not long for this world either.
Yeah, apparently he's not doing great, but he really bonds with Stuart when Stuart busts out the Mick Jagger moves.
Yeah, he does. They have a little dance scene there. No, but can we?
If you could hear an eye roll.
I'm doing it right now.
I just have one more character yeah. thing to get through, which is Billy is like the manager, presumably.
Assistant manager
at the Awful Town.
He's still a minor, for sure.
Yeah, he's a kiddo.
Yeah.
But he...
No adults running this Awful Town.
Yeah.
Do you think all the adults in this town are dead? And that's
why they can't wait to get out.
Yeah.
That's what I want to talk about next.
Well, so Billy is the assistant manager, and he lets Keon have the party here. And he also is like a kind of fun take on your typical stoner, where he just like feels that the universe has your back. And so every line of his is just about like a different thing about how like the universe, you know, you can't ask the universe for anything. It has to like be given to you unexpectedly.
A lot of made up aphorisms.
My favorite quote from him was, the universe always has the answer. You just have to subscribe to her newsletter.
Yeah, that was the most bizarre.
I literally guffawed when he said that. Couldn't believe.
He was funny.
Couldn't believe.
Yeah. So I guess to wind up all these storylines with people with the same sounding names, they all end up at the big old party at the Awful Town. And like Aaron said, the people who need to kiss, kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Stuart and Julie kiss on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Tobin and Angie kiss on the roof.
Yeah.
Addie and Dory kiss outside.
Mm-hmm.
And the dancer
No,
friends.
Addie and Dory don't kiss. They're best
God
friends.
God damn it.
Dory
and Carrie kiss outside. And Carrie's supportive dancer friends are like cheering them on from the window.
Yeah.
Which
yes.
Which
she
I
takes
loved.
A step forward.
Yeah.
Keon
doesn't get his DJ idol to come and hear him, but Stuart is there. And so he's kind of like, this is crazy. Ooh. Stuart is here and he's going to hear my music. Billy is just there.
He loves.
He's got the universe.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. He's fine.
And then Tinfoil Woman.
Played by Joan Cusack. Did we say that?
We did.
Okay. We did.
But it's important to note again.
Played by star Joan Cusack.
Yeah, God. I love her so much.
Me too.
And she's been covered on the pod along with her brother because she played they played actual siblings in Say Anything.
Yeah.
Mm.
But she's the narrator and she...
And she's the tow truck driver?
She's a tow truck driver. There was a lot of car crashes in this
Yes, because of the snow.
Snow.
Yeah, and one thing I kind of missed was that Tobin also had this beef with these twins because he stole their keg to bring
alcohol. Right, and they were
the
chasing him down the whole night.
Yeah, and that caused his car
back.
To blow a tire. And when Joan Tinfoil Woman finally shows up, she really chews him out. But they made a big show of an insert shot of his tire blowing out.
Yeah.
felt that was unnecessary. She really had very little sympathy for this poor guy.
I know.
So it all winds up really nicely. Joan has a wonderful narration about snow to bookend the movie. And there's a post-credits dance scene where everyone's just having a good time at the party.
Yeah.
And kissing. And the pig's just like eating an ice cream sundae or something.
Yeah. Let him live.
Yeah.
Yeah. At, like, the end of the movie, basically, Tinfoil Woman wraps it up by saying, snow can make a difference, especially on Christmas Eve. Sometimes you just gotta let it snow. Whatever that means. Metaphorically.
My eyes are rolling again.
You gotta let it pour. You gotta
so
let
loud.
It. You gotta let chaos unfurl. I feel like is what she's. You gotta roll with the punches. I think that's what she means.
I think you just gotta let nature take its course.
Yeah.
Let the universe do its thing and give you a fresh blank slate to start in and make a snow angel.
Yeah. Like a snow angel.
No, I'm just actively trying
like a
to get
snow angel.
They're stuck in the back of my head.
The other kind of like bookend thing that of course you knew was coming from the moment this movie started is they find the W.
Oh,
in
yes.
The storage closet, and it doesn't work, but they put some Christmas lights on it. Aww. So that it's no longer Awful Town, it's Waffle Town. And then at the very end, as Tinfoil Woman drives away, the light comes on in the W.
Oh,
so you
yeah.
can only assume that her tinfoil was preventing the electricity from getting into the W.
I did not draw that conclusion.
That's what
I'm
it
really,
was.
I think it's really a stretch.
Yeah. She was just driving around fully covered in tinfoil, and I assumed it was to protect herself from cell phone.
That's
rays getting
too.
Into her body. Which
she really wasn't a fan of cell phones.
She wasn't a fan of cell phones. That was like her whole thing. Was she, just like, you're getting too caught up in likes and what people think of you and blah, 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 blah.
This is all to Addie.
You being the present, yeah.
And then she eventually, sort of accidentally, in trying to prevent Addie from being on her phone, throws it out, and then it gets run over by the twins' car.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was weird because...
Everything's threaded together.
Because a few people ask Tinfoil Woman... Why do you wear tinfoil? And she's like, I'm never going to answer that question.
And she doesn't.
And we never get the answer to that question the entire movie.
If I had one question for the writers of this.
But it's irrelevant.
No,
it but it is irrelevant. I mean, it's upsetting that it's not resolved, but like.
Yeah.
You can
it
assume.
Doesn't really matter. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Tinfoil Woman was sort of like the Clarence of this movie.
Absolutely.
A la It's a Wonderful Life. She's like the guardian angel of this town.
Definitely.
Because everyone here is parentless. Mm-hmm. Or their parents have left the town. They're living in a town that has fallen under a time warp, like a Twilight Zone episode, where for some
all
reason
the
their families
are
not around for Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And no one's asking where they are. And they're not worried about being caught drinking alcohol underage at a business establishment.
No.
There are no cops.
No.
There are no adults in this town except for Tinfoil Woman
and Julie's,
oh, and then
Julie's
Keon's
family.
Parents who and come home and so he
Keon's
can't have the party at his house.
But then they're just fine.
But
with
he's
him
not grounded or
off.
Anything.
Yeah, they just let him take off and have a party. At
also, it's like, why were they going to leave him town. For Christmas Eve? Why were they going to let him stay and then the rest of them were going to go? I just want to know. What the deal is with all that. What do you guys think?
I think there are already too many characters in this movie.
True.
Yeah.
So I can't memorize any more names. I can't even try. I'm maxed out.
Yeah.
You heard me struggle to get through that synopsis.
The upper limit of holiday fun for Katie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm spread too thin.
Yeah.
Aaron, did you have any thoughts on the lack of parents?
Whoa. You know what's funny? I love scary movies, and that's usually the first thing I call out. Like Ouija, which is a movie that came out a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, like, kids were dying every day and there were no police or parents. And I'm just like, it seems like a lot of this could have been solved if maybe someone picked up the phone and called an authority figure. Like, I don't understand. I think it's because we're not trying to muddy the waters of these other relationships by introducing parents, especially if it's a teen-focused mm-hmm. story, because like the parent dynamic I feel like is so dominant, it takes away from like the adultiness of being in like being in love or whatever. But it is frustrating to me because I love a good parent child dynamic, which I think is perfectly done in Easy A. Stanley Tucci
and Lisa Kudrow
and
it's not
Patricia Clarkson.
Yeah, that's right. Lisa Kudrow just played a very similar character
with Will Forte.
Well, also Lisa Kudrow is in Easy A. She plays the guidance counselor.
Yeah, you're right. Stanley Tucci as a dad is perfect.
Stanley Tucci in every single role he's in is perfect.
I'm obsessed with him.
Anyway, back to Let It Snow.
I have a theory about Tinfoil Woman.
Oh, go on.
Well, I think we should speculate on what the tinfoil is for. But okay. This is my theory, and it's a stretch, but I'll share it with you.
I think that the reason why it's the tinfoil thing is to make her like inexplicably crazy.
Right.
Yeah. And also like omniscient, like she can narrate because of it.
Yeah. Like it's like a catch all. Like she's not like actually crazy or like crazy in an unapproachable way. Mm-hmm. She's kooky. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing really going on there.
Yeah.
That's my theory on it.
I like that. Whoa, you're going to hate my theory, which is this. Okay, so it's a Christmas movie, right?
Yes.
And Tinfoil Lady is this kind of like, we've established angelic, omniscient, all-knowing character who's looking out for people. And she's played by Joan Cusack, whose initials are JC. Christmas is all about presence, but also Jesus Christ.
Wow.
And she is sort of like the savior of this movie. Like she's looking out for everyone.
Uh-huh.
So she is this sort of like Christmas miracle figure.
Yeah.
And obviously I know that's based on the initials of the actress playing this
character.
No, I want
to change my answer to that.
This is a deep cut though.
But I don't know. Kay Cannon, can you comment on this? Yeah. Am I on to something? Joan, do you have any input?
Let's call him up.
Yeah. I don't know. I just sort of like noticed that and thought I'd run with it.
No, I'm obsessed with that theory.
Thank you.
Thank you.
She's Jesus.
She's Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus and tinfoil.
Well, there wasn't enough God in this movie. That's for damn sure.
There was not.
There was that all multi-faith Christmas pageant at the church.
Missing one wise man.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, because they had the two wise men singing. They're like, where's the other one? It's because Tobin was wearing the costumes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's
funny. That was funny.
Yeah. Tobin Toe. Am I about to come up with another theory?
Are you?
Let me work on it. Come back to me.
Maybe a two-part episode.
Yeah. Did you have any other? She's a burrito. She's a baked potato. She is protecting her mind from aliens.
That was the thought. I think a big trope of this movie is just how like cell phones are poisoning teens' brains, mm-hmm. and obviously we see that play out through Addie mostly. But I feel like placing her with Tinfoil Woman the most is like a way of displaying that, like, that's she's protecting herself so she can continue living in the present and in the old ways of the world or whatever.
No, yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I feel like every grown up, how old are these writers? They're Gen Xers, probably.
They're at like 40s.
Or old millennials.
Older millennials or Gen Xers.
Older millennials, yeah.
I feel like
that. Kay Cannon's in her 40s.
They're definitely concerned about the youth, Gen Z, being on their phones, being raised on the internet, mm-hmm. and being aware of their social media presences.
Probably rightfully so.
Yeah, truly, yeah. Because I was like thinking about that. I was like, God, I'm like so glad I didn't have to worry about how many likes I was getting for my posts in middle school, and like seeing who's viewing my story and things like that. Because like it makes sense.
It really does a number on your brain.
I mean, I don't want to be, I don't think I would necessarily be like Addie the way she's just like, because I was trying to figure out if she is being overly insecure with Jeb. Like, obviously, Jeb is not returning her text and is being, like, aloof and not responding to her. He sucks. Yeah. But at the same time, he sort of said something like, can't I hang out with my friends? And I was like, well, maybe if we are going with the message that she's, like, on her phone too much or, like, taking stock of that too much, that like maybe he is hanging out with his friends and she's just paranoid because she's on her phone all the time, seeing what he's doing without her and magnifying like his relationships with other people, some of whom happen to be girls.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like he needed to be like, hey, Addie, I care about you as my girlfriend and I value the time that I spend with you. Feel like there's a
And he called her annoying.
Oh, yeah. In front of everyone, which sucked. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like surely like she needs to like, you know, put her phone down after an hour a day and no more or whatever. But I do think that like a lot of the ickiness of the situation is like not hers alone.
Oh, there's
her boyfriend's not a so good
his
Jeb.
Name is Jeb, so
maybe it also is okay that they don't have like an openly preachy moral on phone
it'd use. Be even worse if they did.
But well,
grown-ups
that,
are the worst on phones.
Grown-ups.
I'm 32.
We're children. Us kids we get it. You're watching Disney Channel. There's like a disconnect between the generations and phone usage. That is for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. TikTok.
Oh, I love TikTok.
I want to get into TikTok.
But you just have to spend some time on it.
Okay. Yeah. It's kind of like the new Vine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ish. Is that not a good?
Ooh,
is that...
No. That's a good parallel. Because it was born from a different app called Musical.ly, which is like a lip sync app. A lot of the like viral content on TikTok. I just want to let everyone know that I'm a social media professional. I'm not a freak who knows a lot about TikTok.
Okay, we got
it. I'm normal. This is my job. So it's a lot of like dancing and lip syncing, but the comedy on TikTok is supreme. As good as it was on Vine, in my opinion. Check it out.
The viral videos that make their way to Twitter.
Yeah,
and
I see. Whoa, I see the TikToks on
new
Twitter.
It's so good.
What is this new art form?
It's so good. But the users are so young.
They're
9 years old. It's like, so young.
It's like a whole new language of expressing humor that I need to learn.
Yeah. You just got to spend time on it.
Yeah. I will say it's interesting in working in kids television and trying to adapt kids television formatting for that like attention span.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're used to like micro consuming media. Yeah.
Micro content.
Yeah.
That hurts my brain to think about.
Wait until they all have to read Grapes of Wrath in high school. They're going to hate it.
It's so long.
So what were some fun moments about this movie?
Okay. So I just want to throw one thing out there. Mm-hmm. So I went to Columbia for my undergrad. And so when I saw her, Julie, of course, it's an IE, open her letter.
Yeah.
First of all, it says Columbia School of Journalism, which has no undergraduate programming. It's only a graduate school.
Oh.
And then the idea that she would quote unquote lose her scholarship she deferred, which is absolutely untrue. I will tell you that Columbia will take your money whenever you like. Okay. And you could defer because you're a model, or because you wanted to open your own theme park.
These are the top reasons.
These are the top reasons. Reasons that I actually have experienced from people that I met while at Columbia.
Oh my God.
It is a wonderful yet psychotic school.
Wow.
But like the idea that she would not be able to stay at home with her dying mother and would need to defer for, if she's as sick as she says, like, only 1 year,
because
her mom is definitely gonna die like all the other adults in this town.
Maybe they live near a nuclear power plant or something.
Like, honestly,
don't eat the waffles.
I saw that and I was like, there's no, like, this is so implausible to me. There's like not even conflict here.
Yeah.
Just my cold dead heart.
Thanks for setting the record straight.
You're welcome,
Columbia, Aaron.
You know, I had to tell you all. It was important to me.
Yeah, you really saved their tarnished reputation.
Yeah, their tarnished reputation.
While also saying people there are psychotic.
Listen,
I've always had a very romantic idea of Columbia. I think it's because Peter Parker wanted to go there. It's in New York.
Yeah,
yeah. All the above.
Well, it's a beautiful school.
Yeah, those steps.
Beautiful
that building.
Campus.
There's a lot of fun moments in this movie. Should we list some of our faves?
Yes.
Some of our faves. Can we talk about the quote that Jilly says? Snow hides a lot. It's like the Spanx of weather.
Y'all.
What does it mean?
It's a simile, right?
It's like the Spanx of weather, indeed.
Even if it's true, doesn't mean you should say it. Do you know what I mean? It's not that, like, all of, like, what she said is accurate, but it is just, like, so far away from being.
It's a very creative
comparison.
Reach.
Yeah.
And there's just something to be said about, you know, older classic literature. Similes in those have a poetry to them.
Yes, agreed.
And Spanx are not poetic.
No.
They're functional.
Yes.
We love them.
Yes.
But not in similes.
No. Also, like, what are you implying about the terrain of what town are, what's the name of the town?
I forget.
Snowtown,
Illinois. Like, that it's like lumpy and gross underneath. Yeah, like, how fat phobic of them. Right? I hate that.
True. Yeah.
True.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah, that was a fun moment.
we just sucked all the fun right out of it.
You know what my other moment that I wanted to talk about was? And I was like, oh, wait, this doesn't classify as fun. I'm going to go over it anyway. I was a little upset when Tobin tells Angie he loves her on the roof because he's like, I'm in love with you. And not in the old-fashioned way or not in the traditional way.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, like, a bunch of possessive ways that he loves her. Like, he wants to spend all his time with her. He thinks about her every second of the day.
Which Addie's exact problem.
Honestly, horrifying. I do not want someone thinking about me every second of the day. Like, please have some hobbies.
Especially if you're in a location where you have nowhere to run. You're on a roof.
And other interests. Yeah, I know. It was, like, honestly kind of creepy. And then he was like,
with the broken sign. Mm. There's a lot of horror movie elements.
There are. This is like one step away from being a horror movie.
Awful town.
Yeah. And then he was like, honestly, I wanted to murder JP. And he's like, I love you. And then she doesn't really bat an eye to that. And she says, actually, that is kind of the traditional way. And then they laugh about it. And then she's like, it was always you. And then they make out. And I was like, honestly, that is not attractive to me at all. Like, I would hate a guy to say that to me. I'd be like, please find some other interests. Balance your life out.
Yeah.
Then we can talk.
I don't know. But like, I feel like even now, like the myopic, you're the only thing important in my life is still highly romanticized. Which is interesting because like if that were your real life or whatever, like if somebody said to me, like, I'm in love with you and I think about you constantly, I'd be like, listen, never contact me again. Lose my number. Do I need a restraining order? Like it's so interesting how this like idealized version is so far away from what anyone would actually be interested in having in a relationship.
Yeah, and I think it goes hand in hand with the notion of like a romantic partner has to be all these different things to you. They have to be your best friend. They have to be your rock to confide in hard times. They have to like be
your perfect lover,
physically appealing. Yeah, your perfect lover. They have to be all of those things. And it's like, well, I mean, you know, we all have best friends for a reason, so we can go to them for other problems. It's unrealistic to expect one person to deliver all those things from you. So I agree that that idea is still like highly passed around in media, but also in like our own media that we create on social media. Another fun moment. Let's keep the fun going. Listen, guys, life isn't always fun in games, and we try to model the podcast after what life is like.
And we appreciate it.
You know what was fun is JP, the character.
JP.
Oh, what a hot man.
He is great.
Delicious.
Yeah.
He's really gorgeous.
Yes.
But he's fit and he
meditates.
Sweet.
Yes.
And kind and introspective. Yeah. A feminist. Yeah. He's intelligent.
He seemed to be saying what he was thinking.
Yeah. Wow.
Twist. You know,
I was like, why is Angie even considering Toby when she's got to get JP?
Trobin.
I just love that he got downgraded to Toby from a Tobin. Honestly, he is
That's
more a Toby.
That's a downgrade.
Is, yeah. We all know all Tobys are like Toby from The Office. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but JP was super fun. And like, yeah. What was that moment in the car? They were like listening to something.
I think they were listening to music.
They were listening to music. And then, one of them said like bitch or something. And he was like, can we turn this down? I'm a feminist.
Yes.
And he was like uncomfortable with the...
Yeah.
Yeah, but
derogatory
like
language towards women.
Like, be an ally.
Yeah. Yeah.
It felt genuine, which yeah. I was like, that's cute.
Yeah, it would have been easy to kind of characterize that. And he played it in a realistic way, which was fun.
Yeah.
And he also, it should be noted in the end, ends up dancing with Addie.
Yeah, so love is not lost for
JP. Oh, the two hottest people in the whole movie end up together, exactly. Maybe. I love that.
Yeah. How it should be.
You know what I was wondering when I was watching this movie, because of the comparisons to Love Actually, I was like, is one of these stories gonna break our hearts like Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman or Laura Linney and Rodrigo Santoro?
Yeah, I feel like there was just not like...
There was everything goes the way you want it to.
Yeah, I feel like once you've moved a movie like from the rom-com category into the holiday movie category, you're not encountering that kind of like tragic twist.
Right.
I feel like rom-coms, it's allowed. Holiday movies, it's not. There absolutely must be 100% redemption at the end of a holiday film.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you've crushed the seasonal spirit.
Yeah.
And no one wants to spend any money, and that's not what capitalism is about. So, nope. Like...
Merry capitalism to us all.
Merry capitalism to us all.
Yeah. Merry coffee and merry capitalism.
I think Love Actually is kind of the exemption to that rule, the only one we know of. I hoped and I knew it wouldn't happen, but with Stuart and Julie, because they're like one of the main stories, right. So they have to end up together, and they're so sweet together.
I thought...
For a second, or I hoped for a second, that when they parted ways and they say, like, you know, one day can't change anything for us.
Which, honestly, that was
it was a little surprisingly gut-wrenching, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought that perhaps there could be an alternate ending there where instead of her ending up with him, she comes to the realization one day is enough to change everything, but it's changing in me feeling like empowered about making a decision about my future and not retreating. And I thought that perhaps that could be a lovely sort of modern love kind of takeaway from it, where they don't end up together, but
and choosing your
from
family instead over romantic pursuits too.
Well, choosing her own future, choosing what's best for her, choosing to live her life forward and not in retreat, as her mom said.
Good point. Yeah.
But they do end up together and they end up switching, and it's really cute because
they're both
so great. And to talk about Stuart for a second, when they're arguing in her room at her house, and he's
so cute.
He's like sticking up for himself. And a lot of times I think it's hard to sympathize with a famous rich person in a movie. We talked about it in Notting Hill with Julia Roberts. But you know, I think that movie also does a good job of humanizing a huge star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he was so humanized, and he like stuck up for himself. He could have easily just blown off this girl that he barely knows. Right. But instead he was like, no, there's like something special going on here, and I need you to like understand and meet me in the middle. And they were very good communicators.
I thought so too. I think it's also important to have a traditionally the male character kind of take that route, because I feel like urging someone to be communicative is usually coming from this like hetero lady situation and in a super hetero rom-com or whatever. And just to like challenge that convention, I feel like is really important for the demo of this, for this movie.
That was really nice. Also, we haven't mentioned her at all, but Darcy Carden.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Manager,
her publicist.
Her turn as Bad Janet shows up.
Yeah. She's gone full Bad Janet.
Yeah. It was truly.
Do you have any hand sanny?
It was such a short moment, but God, I enjoyed it a lot.
Yes.
And then also just another fun moment for me was anything out of Billy's mouth. He didn't end up with anyone. He was one of the few loose ends in this movie, but he has gone back to the liquor store many, many times in disguise, but the liquor store employees always recognize him, so he can't get alcohol for the party. I don't know, there's always this stoner dude and he was just kind of this sweet, aloof kind of that guy, and I really enjoyed him. I thought
it's
it was
like
great.
The opposite of a burnout. Like, this was a dude who was like bringing wisdom and light to this group.
Yeah, like
a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Maybe he was on shrooms instead of smoking weed.
He was microdosing.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot they mentioned that.
He's microdosing?
No. Do they? No, they don't.
I mean, this is a town with no parents.
So. My favorite line of the whole movie was Darcy saying, "Oh, thank God you're hot again."
Which is so gross because she's like 10 years older than him and he's still probably under 18.
I don't know.
I thought he was hot the whole time.
Yeah.
I thought he was hot too. But like, if you're like the manager and you're talking about like your...
I think she sees him as a product. This is very...
I know that.
Yeah.
I know that. But I still thought it was like...
I didn't think about it that
but
much.
But as a consumer, I thought he was hot the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As a consumer, I was like, look at those cheekbones and this sweet smile.
I don't know if you guys saw the movie Yesterday.
No.
About the what if the Beatles didn't exist.
Yes, I saw it.
I remember Kate McKinnon plays his manager in it, and it was a very similar type role where like she is a monster in it.
Yeah.
And she, it's a much more prominent role.
She's really funny.
Yeah. I watched it on the plane. All right. Addie apologizes to Dory.
Yes.
With an apology pig. Yes. And she also goes as far as to say, if Dory and Beyonce were in a burning building,
yeah. Oh my God.
She would save Dory.
Those are powerful words.
I don't know. Is it? I feel like I don't know Beyonce, and I would save my best friend.
Yeah, I would save my best friend.
I would certainly like make sure that I let people outside know that Beyonce was inside.
Oh my God, I would
she's
be like,
in danger.
The
someone
smoke.
Know.
Beyonce is inhaling smoke.
You're
gonna save her and her lungs,
her vocal cords.
It was just another one of those kind of modern topical jokes a la Spanx.
There was like some early, like very 2019 reference in the film, and I was like, this movie will not age well.
Yeah, it already like, seemed dated.
Yeah, next Christmas everyone will be like, what are they saying?
I know.
Yeah, it did have a little bit of that. Also, I had one question. So you guys watched the dance, post-credits dance.
Yeah.
Scene,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it end on an oink? Because it ended on a shot of the pig, and I swear to God, there was a tiny little oink at the very end of the song.
I can't
not
noticeable
enough to me.
I can't remember, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did.
So, in the spirit of holiday movies like Love Actually and Let It Snow, where all of the characters are interwoven, they know each other and interact in some way or another, the cast and crew of this movie are also incredibly interwoven in other works of film and TV that they've done. And I'm going to attempt to do a very quick analysis of this.
All right.
This is a Netflix movie. We have Kiernan Shipka, who is also in the Netflix show Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Mm.
And she is also joined by a fellow Netflix star in the actress who plays Dory, who was the daughter of Drew Barrymore and Timothy Oliphant in Santa Clarita Diet.
Yeah.
And then we have a couple Spider-Man connections in that the man who plays
a
Stuart,
web, if you will.
A web. Oh, Aaron, this is why we had you on.
Columbia grad.
The tangled web woven by the man who played Stuart, who voiced the kid in Into the Spider-Verse. But we also have a fellow member of the Spider-Verse in the guy who played Keon, who played Peter Parker's best friend in Spider-Man Far From Home and Spider-Man Homecoming. Now, this movie was written by multiple people, but one of the more noticeable names to us was Kay Cannon. You've heard us mention her several times. She wrote the Pitch Perfect movies, and she also wrote the R-rated comedy Blockers. Now, Billy, the assistant manager at the Awful Town, was in Blockers.
Wow.
Wow. Where are we going next? Dumplin'.
Yep.
Is another Netflix original movie.
The Dolly Parton movie.
It is an ode to Dolly, and it's really quite fun.
It's
if
cute.
You guys haven't seen it. So joining our queue of Netflix stars is the girl who plays Addie, because she was the friend, one of the one of the students, or like I think the best
friend.
She's
the main best friend.
She's the main best friend in Dumplin'. She is also in Lady Bird, which is just a fun fact.
Greta Gerwig, also Columbia grad. So.
Oh my gosh.
Perfect, oh wow. Perfect tying another, in. Another string on the web. Now we have a couple loose ends here, but we're just going to dive into them because there are probably other connections. And if you know connections that we haven't mentioned, let us know. Julie, played by Isabel
Merced.
Merced. And she played Dora in Dora in the Lost City of Gold, which is a very fun movie. The guy who played Tobin is in the Descendants movies. Anyway, this is all to say that there's a lot of consistent threads connecting people in this movie. And while it doesn't all end up in a party at a waffle place, I just found it interesting that there's a lot of crossover.
Probably
just because there's so many damn people in this
thing. I know. Yeah, it's the Netflix cinematic universe.
Yes. Living for that. Yes. Can't wait for the theme park.
I feel like this is like the springboard for all their young talent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know?
They clearly like to cast a lot of the same people, and I think that's kind of cool.
Like the old studio systems, you know, they had their actors that they had for contracts.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they're all under insane contracts.
They probably insane Netflix contracts. Because we're back in that world of vertical integration, guys.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm gonna love it. When's the bubble gonna burst?
Never. There's gonna be so many OTTs that everyone will be paying $800 a month to watch the shows they want to watch.
Oh, yeah, dear God. It's gonna be so much more expensive than cable ever was.
Too much content.
Thank you so much for illuminating us on this magnificent web that Netflix weaved for all of us.
Mm. Yeah. Just call me Charlotte.
Because of the web.
I'm a spider. I'm weaving a web.
Not Charlotte from Sex and the City, you guys.
No, she was not a spider.
But she is starring in a Netflix rom-com. I'm the Rob Lowe. The web grows bigger.
Perfect.
Oh, that's a, yeah. I think it's time, Lena.
To get tested?
Let's get tested.
Yeah.
That's what we're calling the segment, Erin.
I like it.
It's where we talk about the various media tests and we see how the movie passes them.
Or doesn't.
But honestly, while I was watching this, I was like at ease because I was like, oh, clearly this is going to pass all the tests. Thank the Lord. So the first test, of course, is the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
There's lots of gals in this movie. Mm-hmm. They all talk to each other and they talk about many different subjects. Mm-hmm. Not pigs. Just boys. Apology pigs, tinfoil women,
waffles,
jobs. So it passes.
Yay.
That's me checking.
She's got a big old pencil and a pad of paper.
It's making a lot of noise.
She's just. Our next test is called the DuVernay test, which is, are there people of color represented in this movie that are in prominent roles? Yes, there are. There are plenty.
There are so many.
Wonderful. And then we've got the Vito Russo test, which was developed by GLAAD to see if there's any openly LGBTQIA+ characters in the movie. And yes, there are. There are multiple.
Yes.
One of them, her storyline is dealing with her sexual identity. But I think overall, it's good. It's good representation, especially because it's a youth, a teen movie. It's kind of hard not to feature coming out stories in a teen movie.
And you also see one of those characters have a really strong female friendship with someone else that doesn't revolve around her sexuality.
So great, pass. And then the last test is the Bernard test, developed by our old guest Alex Bernard.
Which knows Alex.
And he stated that rom-com is not a rom-com unless it is delightful, a little ridiculous, and surprisingly gut-wrenching. Do we think this movie has all three elements?
My gut was not wrenched by this
Your
film.
Your gut was not wrenched?
No.
I have to say I'm a sucker, and my gut was wrenched.
Me too.
By Stuart and Julie.
Yeah,
and
when the manager...
Sorry, Erin.
When the manager's saying, like, it's just one day, he makes every girl fall in love with him, don't pay any mind to this. And then the part that gut-wrenched me was when Julie takes her words and throws them back at him and they say their goodbyes, I was like, oh my God, but they really did have something. This is so sad.
I don't know, guys.
Erin's a weathered woman.
I guess.
She's seen a lot of snow in her day.
There's only so much you can smooth over.
Here's what, here's
the Spanx of weather isn't doing it this time.
I will say, I think whether this movie passes the Bernard test is shaky and subjective for people. It's not as clear.
And we've heard a lot of different opinions on this movie from different yes. people. Some people love it. Some people hate it.
Yeah, it's been gotten a lot of mixed reviews. So I guess let's say it doesn't necessarily pass the Bernard test. Yeah,
this is our only test that is truly subjective.
Yeah.
Sounds like a bad test, Alex Bernard.
You heard it here, Alex. You guys can duke it out on the clubhouse stage.
But that thus concludes our segment, Let's Get Tested.
And it brings us to story time. Yay! Erin, have you had a rom-com moment in your own life, or have rom-coms influenced you in any particular way that you'd like to share?
Yes, I would. Okay, so how it pertains to my real life. So I just got married in March.
Congrats!
Thank you. And I met my husband, Andrew, on Bumble. Ooh. And a lot of like little pieces about our relationship feel very rom-com-y, and I will list them off. But there is one story that's very good. And actually, I have never told this story because it felt a little braggy. So,
oh my God, please so brag. It's, the right place.
It's exclusive to Rom-Com Effect. So a couple of things. So Andrew and I met on Bumble. It was both of ours only Bumble date that we ever went on.
Oh, wow. Oh my God.
We have the same birthday.
What?
We're both April 4th. So he's a year older than me, but we have the same birthday. We both majored in poetry in college.
Majored in poetry in college?
Useful. Now we both work in marketing.
Are you a poet?
No, I'm not a poet.
Oh. No, but she knows what a simile is.
That's right.
Yeah, you do.
That's right. And that's pretty much it. But those are like pretty, like freaky. Those are,
that's crazy that you have the same birthday. Amazing.
I know.
Same year?
No, he's okay. 1 year older.
Okay.
Yeah. So the rom-com story. Okay. So this is going to age me a little bit, but I don't know if everybody remembers, for a time, Tiffany's was like very, very popular with teenage girls.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
So I don't know if you remember kind of like the chunky heart.
Yes,
bracelet that had like that like chunky clasp. It was featured. Elle Woods wears one in Legally Blonde. But I remember it like every girl got one for her bat mitzvah. It was like a very big deal. And I, when I grew up, that was very much like a cutesy, like very like important piece of like jewelry canon in my life. Right.
Jewelry canon.
Yeah. So Andrew, my husband, his family worked in the jewelry industry, and his grandfather actually designed the prototype of the heart on that bracelet. I don't know, like this is something that I learned about the jewelry industry, but like a lot of oftentimes like the way that something is designed will be licensed by Tiffany's or like purchased by Tiffany's or whatever. Okay. Not necessarily created in-house, but then they create the jewelry.
Interesting.
So his grandfather, Bert, designed it. And when Andrew was 12 or 13, his grandfather gave him this prototype and said, you know, like, hold on to it for somebody special.
Oh, my God.
And Andrew gave it to me a year into us dating.
Oh, my God.
Which felt like a weirdly cinematic, like this like iconic bracelet that like from like middle school to high school was just like, that's really cool, I wish that I had one, like kind
the
of
heart
thing.
Of the ocean in Titanic.
Exactly.
I love this.
Oh my, I got chills.
And he had no idea that this
significance for me to know.
Yeah.
No.
It was meant to be.
Yeah.
Did he, when he gave that to you, was it because he was pretty sure he was going to marry you? Or like, how, when did you get engaged?
We got engaged almost 2 years. Like, we were almost together 2 years.
Okay, so yeah. so he had given this to you maybe a full year before proposing.
Yeah, he gave it to me. Yeah, I think a full year before.
Ooh, yeah. But he just knew. He just knew you were the special person he needed to give it to.
Yeah,
so that cute. Is so sweet. I love that. Coming,
I'm just
full
so
circle.
Glad I got to tell that story. I was just like, because it felt very like, you know, Sandra Bullock opening the, yeah, like the jewelry box, and there's the, yeah, like her childhood jewelry or whatever.
And also, if you're into imagery, the cyclical nature of a bracelet connecting one end of a heart to another.
Oh my gosh.
Gorge. Well, we can see who the screenwriter is.
Oh my goodness. I love that. Yeah. Thank you, Aaron.
Please.
Well, that wraps up this episode on Let It Snow.
I love this.
For us.
Thanks for coming on.
Oh my gosh, what a pleasure.
You can catch Aaron doing improv around town.
Yeah, at UCB.
UCB. The Clubhouse. Come to Mock on Thursday nights at 11.
Please do.
You can follow her on Instagram and Twitter and everything at ES Byrne.
That's right.
BYRNE.
That's right. Like David Byrne, but we're not related.
with an E and an S in front.
Yes.
This is probably with a D somewhere in there. But anyway, you can look that up if you really want to follow him. But you can also follow us on all the social medias at Romcom Effect, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
And Instagram stories.
Thank you so much for coming on, Aaron.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Be sure to like and subscribe. Rate us on Buzzsprout, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. And we'll see you next time.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.